Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, this is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, coming to you from the NAMM Show here in Anaheim, California. And we're in the middle of Saturday, the third day of the NAMM Show, and we've just completed the grand rally for music education. And our special guest today was the tenor crossover trio Forte. So we are they are here with us for Talking at Music Education. Thank you. We're a podcast of the NAMM Foundation, but also coming to you live on Facebook at Enter Talk Radio. So please let people know the Forte Band. There's a fan base out there, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Big fan. Let them know we're here.
We will. We will, we will post that to our Forte family.
Yeah. That's what we call them. Let's just do a quick round robin. Tell us who you are.
My name is Josh Page.
My name is Alok Kumar.
My name is Zach Page.
So we have the Brothers Page here with us.
We have Brothers Page as well. And Zach Page actually produced our most recent Forte album called...
And was on stage with us in a whole high-tech setup, making a soundtrack. And there's another member that's not with us. So it was a trio, definitely.
Absolutely was a trio today.
Yeah, yes. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
So we billed you as the classical pop.
Yeah.
Crossover tenor experience. Forte.
You mind if we steal that?
Yeah, please do. But, you know, I need a ticket from something somewhere.
I appreciate
right?
that. Okay.
It was just great. You guys kind of overcame the audience with phenomenal classical tenor singing, first of all. So tell us, just let's start with that. Let's talk about your origin stories. I mean, you are trained singers,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
You are like the Olympic athletes of the vocal cords.
That's what I compare classical singing to. It's something that you never stop training at any point of your career. You always need that input because the voice never stops growing. It always continues to change and you're always adjusting and learning new techniques to match where you happen to be in life at that time. So it is the Olympics of vocal, I'd say. Yeah.
I can't agree more. That's absolutely what it is.
Right. It was like a decision to say, I found something here that has this facility. I feel it in my heart and in my soul, and I'm going to find a teacher, or you find teachers, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right? And there's so many different teachers, and you find the one that really corresponds with where you happen to be at that point in your life and developmentally what they happen to specialize in. And if they can bring out that part of you that, you know, can release an overtone out into the world, because that's really what it is, right?
So are you still studying?
Do
you
Absolutely.
Still go? So what's that like? What do you do every week, every month? Do you just check in with the teacher?
Well, I mean, I kind of have an irregular schedule with them because it depends on whether you're traveling. I mean, my primary teacher is based in New York right now in Manhattan. And so when I'm back, I have an opportunity to see him generally twice a month for financial reasons. Otherwise, I'd be there every day.
Right.
but it becomes a little bit more sporadic when you're on the road. Fortunately, my teacher will Skype lessons. I can always text him if I'm having an issue. It's like, and the nice thing about it is that, you know, after so many years of working with someone, they really know what the issues are and where they may come up. And so they're like, okay, we kind of worked through this, and here's a good tool to.
So is it kind of like that tune up, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
so the things that need tuning up is it has to do with, you know, I'm sitting very straight now. I'm talking with singers, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. like, right. It has to do a lot with like body tension and mind body stuff. I mean, are what you listen to when you sing? Is it?
I think
take
that's
us
a
inside
huge
the
thing.
Singer's head, guys.
Yeah, I mean. There's a misconception that singing comes from the vocal cords when really the singing comes from the body. So the condition of the body has just a tremendous effect on what a performance's outcome is, you know, going to end up being. And not only do I do lessons every week when I can, of course, afford and when I have time to, but also acupuncture. And there's different things that can help deal with tensions that have a dramatic effect on on vocal potential. I've been blessed to be able to do that pretty regularly. And you go and you start to see a roster of people that go to the same acupuncturist and the same voice teacher. And there's a network of people that are headlining artists throughout the world. And those are kind of like their secret weapons.
All that body work, Alexander technique.
Absolutely.
And further to that point, it's one of those things where, and especially, I mean, there's the aesthetic of it all, but the practicality is, I mean, our bodies are our instruments. It's the whole thing. You get to the point where you're finding that there's a lot more or less, even in terms of working out. You know, if you work out in a certain way, it's less about bulking up. It's less about, you know, getting jacked and huge, and more about building a functional, useful, you know, sense of physiology that can support, you know, whether it's, you know, a lengthening and a softening of the muscles, a usability as opposed to just the aesthetic.
Yeah, like gyrotonics as opposed to like beefing up.
Yeah, right,
because if you tighten your chest, then those muscles correspond with the lung channel and you will feel a shortness of breath where you need that extra, you know, that extra space to go.
So when are we going to get the video bodybuilding for singers? Yeah, the workout, no. The tenor workout. Oh,
that's a workout.
Listen, that was
a good idea.
Has an idea been born? I need a piece of that.
It's
actually.
Under workout.
So, all right, Zach, guitarist, producer, composer, layer of sound. You did the whole soundtrack for everything,
yeah,
right? You kind of produced it with. And found the sounds and made that. So do you do this too? Do you have to worry about acupuncture for guitarists? Probably, right? A little bit?
Definitely in a different way. And music production has a kind of creativity. It definitely pulls at certain muscles and places in your body when you're birthing an idea from nothing. Like that takes a kind of pulls energy from you. So when we were doing the Future Classics, kind of listening to these pop songs and making arrangements that are orchestral and could appeal to a classical audience, that definitely doesn't pull from my vocal cords, but definitely from my heart and left-right brain.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
You know, you shared the stage with Vanessa Carlton. Wasn't that fun?
That was fantastic.
We do a segment on the Grand Rally called Inside the Practice Room, just kind of talking about which is kind of what we're having here, you know, the creative process. And you can't deny that you need time, you need to reserve time, you need to schedule time around it. You know, it's artistry, and it just doesn't come from anywhere.
Yeah.
It has to come from somewhere.
Mirrors life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So what are your most recent projects, things where you've performed, the stuff you're doing online?
Sure.
Where you've performed recently? Would you like to start talking about the Brothers Page?
Sure. Brothers Page, we've been focusing a lot on social media. That's the big word now, because there's no denying that with the potential to reach an arena's worth of people at the click of a button, that's not something that artists can afford to ignore anymore. And I think that the rise over the past two decades has just been so dramatic. And it's been an inspiration for Forte also to say, you know, how can we create these viral videos that are going to reach audiences that otherwise we would never have the potential to reach? But in particular, Zach and I have been really focusing on Instagram. And there are systems and there are algorithms that if you focus and understand, you can break into audiences that you truly otherwise would never reach in a lifetime. And it's such a pleasure when we ask them, hey, well, you know, like, where are you guys from? And it's literally like everywhere in the entire world. New Jersey, Kenya, Afghanistan, Libya, Paris. Like, it just keeps going. You start to realize, wow, the potential to reach people has just skyrocketed over the past few decades. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing that needs to start being integrated into music education also, is not only leaving people with an incredible degree, but an incredible social following that's grown within those structures.
And the knowledge to communicate with it.
Absolutely.
And the knowledge to be authentic with it.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like learning a new instrument. When you first are on an app, whether it's Instagram or anything, at first it feels very foreign and you don't feel comfortable. But if you really dedicate energy into making the app feel like home, like you do with your guitar or your voice, you really start to be able to put your heart into the app. I think a lot of people try it and then they're like, oh, that's not for me. But that's like trying guitar for a week and saying you have to practice and really learn the instrument.
You know, we have this Gen X program here. There's conference sessions that our college kids are going to. Maybe we should have you back and doing one of those sessions.
We'd love
to. That could be really cool.
We'd love
to.
Fantastic.
Because again, they're all training to be really, really good musicians.
Yeah.
But then what is the...
And this new social... This is calling on the artist to become this new kind of hybrid artist, businessman, advertiser, because there's your talent and then there's the ways in which you reach that talent out into the world to gain new audiences for it. And those are actually way more separate than most people know. Those are two very separate things.
Then how does that, the authentic artist,
yeah,
communicate in a way that is pure and really the authentic to the art, what you guys have done,
sure,
with your voice?
Sure.
How about you? Where have you recently performed?
Most recently, actually, I had a very, very interesting 2017, 2016, actually, with debuts at Covent Garden, the Royal Opera in London, with the new work, actually. It was a world premiere of the only opera by legendary Indian sitarist and composer Ravi Shankar.
Wow. And is it coming to the States? Are they going to bring it?
Well, I'm hoping so.
Anybody, Dallas or one of the Houston, one of the opera companies?
Well, actually, the way it was set up was it was a semi-staged work and it was done in collaboration between the London Phil and the Royal Opera House. And it incorporated Eastern classical musicians, Eastern classical dancers, the London Phil playing, obviously, Western classical realization of Indian, these ancient Indian...
Did you have to sing microtonals and all sorts of...
No, I didn't. No? And we were terrified because all the singers were opera singers. And I was actually the only Indian-born opera singer or Indian opera singer there in the cast. And of course, prior to getting in, I thought, you know, I need to figure out my past really quickly because I got to acquaint myself with where it came from.
It's a whole different modality, right?
It's a different tonal
language.
Absolutely.
But they didn't call you to task.
No,
you know?
In fact, when we asked about it, the conductor who is British actually said, "Don't worry about it. People who are coming, they're going to know who you are and what you are and what you're capable of and what you're not." And I was like, that's the key, what we're not. And I was what, we're good.
Good parameters.
Exactly.
Right.
And it was an absolute fusion, you know, because the thing was, that what really made it succeed was the fact that everybody stayed true to what it is they brought to the table. It didn't feel as though they really needed to change it a whole lot. And it was just collaborating on it was jaw dropping. I mean, everyone's sitting there marveling at the dancers, marveling at the Indian.
Well, I hope it comes across the pond.
There was a lot of interest immediately thereafter, so I think it might tour sooner than later.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what else?
I was in Hong Kong for Carmen. I had a string of Carmens actually last year. And
what role?
Don José.
Don
Carmen.
José.
And it was fantastic. It's therapy actually, where I don't have to pay for, you know, because it's just this, you know, angsty downward spiral, emotional spiral of this character from the beginning to the end.
Oh yeah, it's a rough opera emotionally.
It's
fantastic.
Just,
you got to be the worst person in the world.
He's just so rejected.
Yeah, right. I mean, poor guy. I mean, right. You feel bad for him after a certain point.
Right. It's so manipulative.
What's it like singing for Chinese audiences?
Oh, they love
they
Carmen.
They loved it.
They are crazy.
Carmen in particular.
I've spent a little time in China for NAM business, and music education is really growing there. You know, but of course, interacting a bit with the cultural community, they're just crazy.
They're crazy.
And they're producing singers.
Unbelievable singers.
On tenor, sorry guys. Watch out.
Absolutely. Right. That's what I think. I mean, I'm okay if the field of competition shrinks a bit. I mean, on a very selfish note,
right.
You know, at least for another 10-15 years, you know,
But they're cranking, I've heard they're entering the international competitions and applying to all the conservatories on a level.
And I know.
So they're eating it up.
They're absolutely eating it up, and it's huge. I mean, in South Korea as well, because my teacher's studio has an influx of South Korean singers, specifically tenors, actually, who used to be baritones, who come in and just tear it up. I mean, they're unbelievable. You know, and so we have conversations as to whether there's a nexus between a type of sound that's produced and how maybe tied to the language, you know, linguistic ties. And I don't know if there's enough of a sample size, you know, just generally to kind of do that study at this point, but it would definitely be worth it.
There's no doubt that Korean tenors have a Korean tenor sound. Like there are very specific sounds that come from these cultures.
Yeah.
It's just very different. There's nothing like it.
So I would think that they would love what Forte is doing too.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, you know, it's like, how do you go over and plant something over there?
Absolutely.
Right?
We've been dying to tour in Asia and in Korea, and we've come very close a few times, and I hope that we get the opportunity to in the future. But, you know, one of our original members, Hana Ryu, who was with us for our first audition ever on America's Got Talent, and then suddenly had a visa issue and couldn't compete in the rest of the show. And that's when Sean Panikkar stepped in. And it was one of those last minute things where they'd say, you know, we want you guys to move on in this competition. You have 3 days to find a replacement. Otherwise, we can't have you go on anymore. And that last minute energy has always spiraled kind of like a search in me to find find somebody, you know? And, you know, today was an example of that, performing with Alok and Victor. And on this CD in particular, the Future Classics, we have both Sean and Hana returning for the second CD. And his voice is just tremendous. You know, it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. And his pop sensibility, his ability to merge and kind of combine those genres is just unparalleled. So I hope we get the chance to tour Korea.
But it's cool that you're developing sort of a stable of Forte tenors, right?
I think so.
That are also, and maybe you'll have them all together sometime.
I would love that. And you know what?
Would you put Nam on the list for that?
Nam wants to do a big Forte reunion, that would be amazing.
That would be
Because
really
we have
fun.
Never all sang together before. And I think that
we might need a bigger boat.
We might need a bigger boat. But there's an element of the classical world that's always kind of looked down on crossover a little bit. I think the tide is changing. And I think what people can remember, tenors like Richard Tucker were borderline crossover at the time when they would make public appearances like that. Obviously, Pavarotti brought recitals into arenas. That's not normal. And Bocelli continues to kind of carry that throne from Pavarotti. But as far as the legit classical world, I would love for Forte to be an excuse for very trained classical singers to kind of just throw it all aside and have fun and rock out with modern themes. Because I think that's where you get such an incredible emergence of style and training and bringing truly the greatest Olympic voices in the world to the songs that are the most popular in the world. I think that's what's going to save the potential for future audiences within the genre. So.
Yeah, very, very wonderfully said.
Thank you,
Josh.
Thank
truly.
You.
And I think, you know, stay with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, ideas are born for a reason, right? And they develop. Sometimes you have to push rocks up a little hill.
Sure.
But I look back at our music education advocacy work the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was there's rocks to push up.
Absolutely.
We're creating a mindset about it. You know, just by simply doing it. I can't resist the chance to ask just a bit about who your favorite tenors are.
Oh, wow!
You know, because after all, you're world-class tenors. So who's the world-class tenor's favorite tenor over history and the sound? And
for technique, it always is Pavarotti for me. But again, as a young Jewish tenor, Richard Tucker is just such a prime example. These days, I just, you know, came back from my third Jonas Kaufmann recital. There's a voice, my God, just unlike anything in the world.
Huh.
And I've been very blessed to be able to see the greatest tenors in the world throughout the past few years at the Met. You got Polanzani, you got Juan Diego, you've got a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. Well, who would you say?
It would depend on exactly what the criteria is. I mean, old school, I love Lauri Volpi, who was, you know, he actually was one of Corelli's mentors.
It's a hefty sound.
It's a hefty
and
sound.
And for you, as like borderline spinto.
Right. But what I really loved about his sound was that he was this broad sound that he would scale back and really learn how to sing on a fine thread. And that's what he imparted to Corelli, who had even a broader sound, but he was able to, you know, do some amazing things vocally. Mm-hmm. So on a technical level, those guys are in a certain boat. Of course, Pavarotti, because Pavarotti's Pavarotti, and it's just sunshine coming through. Today, it would definitely, for me, be Jonas Kaufmann for a number of reasons. One is he insisted, went through a change, vocal change, and then insisted that something that wasn't quite working for him, even though it was the conventional way of thinking about technique and whatnot, he said, you know what, I need to do it the way I need to do it so I can convey this full panoply of emotion, which is what it's about, communication. And so he kind of went through this change. It was a risk. It was one that turned out to do wonderful things for him in his career. And he continues to make choices and has the courage of his convictions. And that's really something else. and in an industry and in an art form that is, you know, so ensconced in history and tradition, to step into something and say, you know, I'm going to respect it and do that, but here's how we're going to twist it. And that's kind of the reciprocal benefit for classically trained singers doing crossover stuff, is that it frees you up and it kind of takes you away from that sense of, you know, this staid sense of tradition. So it's done how it needs to be done. And you, after a while, feel boxed in. So when you kind of shake things up a bit, you kind of bring that sense of adventure, you know, adventure spirit to the traditional rap, and then it becomes new again.
And we have to remember that at the time, classical music was pop music.
Exactly.
That was the popular music.
That was the hangout music.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's like the looking at the girls music.
Right.
I mean you would think about the early classical.
Oh my God, have you seen that? Have you heard that new Puccini?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you see the Duke's niece at intermission?
Yo, Donizetti just dropped this amazing piece, man. You gotta check it out.
Oh, well, I mean, there was a great story about...
Yeah, and the Count, he's got a really cool carriage, man.
There was, I mean, to that point, there's a great story about Verdi doing Rigoletto while he was writing that, you know, and it ended up debuting in Venice, I believe. And so all the gondolieri were out there and they would listen to the songs that were happening, the operas, arias and whatnot that were happening, and they'd sing them in the boats while they were, you know, ferrying their passengers. And Verdi did not want La Donna Immobile to get out there until that opening. So they buried that piece even in rehearsals.
Wow.
So they wouldn't be heard.
Love it.
Well, if Instagram existed, he would have had some trouble. Thankfully,
you guys are great. You know, talking about tenors for you all, and a little bit for me, is like, you know, other people talking about soccer players, right? It's really great. So last topic, we are really committed to music education and also sort of growing music education and you know, keep pushing the access and opportunity, the options that are available in school music, first of all, to be available, and then a lot of opportunities are growing and expanding. Like, there's more class guitar in schools now than ever before. Mm-hmm. There's technology, there's recording studios, there's some songwriting, there's mariachi music. And so you know, the whole idea of how do we encourage young men to know more about what maybe they can potentially do with their voices. Sure. So it's not, let's say, a choice. Oh, it's just not a place for me because the profile of what is done there doesn't match who I think I am, right?
A lot of times people hold singing up to a standard that they just imagine it to be so impossible, when really every person has a voice and everybody starts from where they start and grows from that point. 9 times out of 10, you hear people say that they got started in their choirs in school. So already there's a tremendous pool of people that are getting inspired by educational programs. But again, if you're going to inspire the masses, then that style has to integrate into pop culture. It has to reach more people to inspire more people. So that's all that I could say is that, you know, opera concepts need to start merging, you know, controversial, but we need to start merging back towards tonality and back a little bit away from the atonal movement. People have to be able to hum a melody in their head. It has to be something that, again, like when classical music was rising, these were infectious melodies that people couldn't stop humming to themselves. And I think for it to become accessible to the public, we need to be smarter with the subject matter that we create operas about. And we need to make sure that they are melodic and beautiful and irresistible. You know, so that's my two cents.
Like La Bohème, like Tosca. Like,
absolutely. When you say those melodies come to mind. But if you were to mention one of 100 works over the past 20 years, it would be very difficult to think of a melody from that. So
absolutely.
I
absolutely agree with it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the exposure and the general exposure that's happening today, too, is something that's kind of creating a safety in numbers too. You know, I mean, there's the pre-existing stigma of, you know, guys feel a little bit reticent about singing and opening their mouths and whatnot, even if there's something there. I think it's going, I'm hoping, but I feel that it is kind of going by the wayside a little bit more.
I do. I think a cappella movement has helped with that.
Yeah,
you know? It has. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of informal a cappella.
Yeah. Right.
We just need some operapella, right?
Acapella.
But you know, opportunities in operapella.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the thing with opera, too, is I think it's also, and it's really interesting to hear people's stories as to how they came to opera. And you got folks who kind of, they got bit by the bug when they were kids and they stuck with it. You're like, okay, that makes sense. And then you got folks who just kind of backed into it. Football players who, you know, I mean, professional football players who decided, hey, you know, I have this other interest, and they decided to go watch a musical theater piece, then heard opera, and then all of a sudden they're at the Met, you know, and like, and singing at the Met. I was like, really? So it's such a diverse field from which, you know, opera singers are drawn that it keeps it interesting. But I don't think there's going to be any dearth of opera singers going to the view. And I don't think there should be, but I don't think there will be, because I think the more people are exposed to it, it's something that either clicks with them or doesn't. And once it does, you're song.
Yeah.
And it's an acquired taste. Yeah. It takes time to develop a love and appreciation for opera and a patience for it and a meditation of seeing the opera, finally turning the phone off and getting to, you know, be swept away. That's a luxury these days, and it's becoming rarer and rarer. So,
but I have to say, studying your work and now getting to know you, I think every teacher should just have this in their curriculum to show what's possible, mm-hmm. just what the voice can do.
Mm-hmm. You got to start where they're interested in.
Whether you ever ever go to an opera ever, just know that it's a really great, beautiful development. Zach, you wanted to ask something?
I was just going to say that I feel at the very core of the issue of young men kind of being hesitant to sing, which is a very real thing, I think it's that young men are very instinctually concerned with being cool and kind of being socially accepted, and to try things that make you kind of exposed and vulnerable, like singing can do, is kind of a very scary. It's a very scary thing to do.
Because you kind of passed through that era.
Yeah,
when grandma said you had to be right.
I was so afraid of it not being cool, but I felt how it helped me grow and evolve in a way that was essential. So I think there's this very delicate, sensitive moment when kids are first introduced to singing by music educators in school. And like, unfortunately, it's usually not introduced in a way where it's very cool, which is a very real thing. And I know personally, if someone's insecure about singing, there are ways, technology and electronic music, which is kind of the new music of our generation, there's so many things you can do to excite students and show them, like Kanye West and these singers are singing in harmony with technology in a way where if you put that kind of a mic in front of a kid and they sing, they'll go, whoa, this is cool. Whereas if you sing, do, re, mi, fa, they'll be like, this isn't cool. But they're instinctually concerned with being cool. So introducing music in a way within the curriculum that lawfully appeals to that, I think would make young men less hesitant to sing.
And then lead them down a path.
Yeah.
Towards the muscular. When I hear you guys sing, the word muscular comes through.
Sure.
You know, because it's the Olympic, right?
It's a masculine cry.
That's irresistible too.
And it's powerful.
And that's cool.
Totally. Exactly.
You lead down the path of coolness.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. To cooler. Right.
Yeah.
That's what forte is. You know,
Forte is
to a certain audience what EDM is to the new generation.
It
hits a level of power where their brains can finally stop thinking.
Yeah.
And I think we're all struggling to focus and unplug and have something that's powerful enough to captivate our attention.
You just, you know, as I stood backstage, in front of stage during rehearsal, and then backstage, just like, yeah, it just sounds so good.
That helps.
That does help.
That helps a little bit.
Thank
you. Thank you so much
for having us
and giving us the opportunity.
Oh, I love
because
it.
There are certain places where this style of epicness is appropriate.
The style of epicness.
There are places where this epicness, you know, is very much not appropriate.
It's only said by a tenor would ever say the style. What style of epicness am I today?
If you're going to sing a Game of Thrones theme, it's got to be epic or get out of here.
What day of the week of my epicness am I emerging?
Yeah.
I'm doing a little tenor pretend here.
You wake up and we wake up and we all have to measure how epic we're feeling.
Am I epic or am I non-epic?
Epic enough, you know. Is this shirt epic enough?
Funny enough, like epicness is one of the most universal qualities of classical music. And what we've seen in classical crossover is it's usually not very epic and usually very romantic.
Yeah, think about it. What record labels support within classical crossover is entirely romance-based. But what's so exciting about opera is epicness.
People throw themselves off a parapet.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's the end.
But those essential traits that work in opera aren't merged in with classical crossover. because it's, and again, it's record labels having a very specific vision of what they think will sell. They need to see it proven before they can invest in it. And that makes sense because, you know, that's their job. And that's why we're blessed to be able to do these things independently.
I'm telling you here, guys, I'm talking at Music Education. You stay the course.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Such
a treat. You stay the course. The NAMM show is an epic.
Absolutely.
An epic experience. You know, rock music is epic. I mean, totally. These people are dressed up, you know, in epic proportion here to come. So good luck. Stay strong. Stay
Thank
in
you.
Touch.
Thank you so much.
Come back to NAMM. Who knows? We might have to work on a young men singing project.
I would love that.
And we'll
find your forte. Find your forte.
Find your forte.
<There it is. laughs>
So we'll send them to your website to listen to you sing.
Yes, please do check out youtube.com/ForteTenors. And if you search Game of Thrones Opera, it's very likely the first thing that will come up on YouTube.
We could hum it as we're going out, maybe.
You can hum it. Well, yeah, I mean, with Game of Thrones, we started learning how to speak the language. And Skari de Maliti Tim Tir Tim, that turns into Skari de Maliti Tim Tir Tim. And it's like, to me, the words fit the theme in a way where we just had to do it. So I hope that you guys go check out our Game of Thrones thing.
So what a fun to talk to Forte, the members of Forte. There are new CD coming out very soon, the Future Classics, but they're all over the web and Instagram. And thank you for being a part of Talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.